UEG Talks, gastroenterology to go. Welcome to our GI podcast. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development.
So welcome, everybody, to the Best of UEG Week with our today's topic, From Bench to Bedside, with Pilar Acedo Nunes and Jozsas Kupinskas. Pilar is a group leader at the University College in London, basic scientist, so very well suited for the task of today. And Jozsas is the chair of the Department of Gastroenterology at the Lithuanian University of Health Sciences in Kaunas. And he has been a member of the scientific committee for a long time, mainly preparing the upper GI program. Thank you very much, Jozsas, for your contribution in recent years. And my name is Julia Meierle, and I will be your host for today. So welcome, both of you. So Jozsas, you will believe I'm very interested on how you liked UEG 2024 in Vienna, because there's one more year where you and me can change something in 2025 in Berlin.
Very excited. We are all set to be actually back from UEG Week, because it was a really good atmosphere. Whomever you asked was very happy about the program that was pulled together, because it looked a very balanced program, and not only for clinicians, but also for basic researchers. I have six basic research people from my lab attending the meeting, and they were all very happy because they could get engaged and learn from the meeting, which is historically used to be thought to be for the clinicians. But there's a lot of interaction between basic researchers and clinicians going on. Also, a lot of common research interest group meetings. So we are back, I think, completely in a good style after the COVID, and the Congress went very well. And as you said, we're looking forward to the Berlin meeting very much.
Yeah, and we have an add-on there. We will have our Digestive Disease Mechanism Summit, where we will have something like an EMBO meeting or Gordon Conference incorporated in UEG Week. And we are already planning a very, very high class basic science conference on carcinogenesis in all parts of the gastrointestinal tract, including liver, pancreas, bile ducts. So I think that will be great. So Pilar, what about you? How did you like UEG 2024?
Oh, I love it. As usual, I think it's a fantastic conference. Also, talking about junior GI, the feedback is fantastic because, I mean, the sessions are great. I think it's a fantastic opportunity to promote translational science, that we see how basic science can have an impact in the clinical setting, and the other way around, how new trials and results can also be changing, right? The cutting edge science that we do in the lab. So yeah, fantastic. As usual. Congratulations, by the way.
So, I mean, what do you think both of you can take away from our basic science and research program this year? Is there something you would like to point out? And do you see a focus for the years to come? Pilar, would you like to start?
I was really, really happy to see all these sessions on microbiota and how, you know, it's like fecal microbiota can have a huge impact on patients in the clinic, but also all the science that we are doing in the bench on using microbiota for prognostic values or even biomarkers for diagnosis. Still a lot of things to do, maybe on the early detection field, but really promising, and even for personalized medicine. I think in the years to come, it's going to be fantastic. And then also on the pancreas area, all the role of the immune system and genetic testing on decision making for our patients is impressive, and all the link with the molecular mechanisms and how they can lead to novel therapies, some talks on KRAS inhibitors and how they can, you know, maybe come in the next years and change how we treat the patients. I think it's just amazing.
Jozsas, what about you?
I would like to say that I think the overall quality, first of all, of basic research methods that are used in the translational setting that are presented in UEG Week is very, very high. And then with probably the microbiome research is one of the best examples of that. There we start using metagenomics, metabolomics across very huge patient cohorts. And it's also very nice to see that we're seeing a change trajectory from the traditional microbiome that we used to study towards the microbiota, the fungi that we are now very much interested as well, and the virome in different diseases. And this covers not only IBD, but the microbiome studies extend to cancer, to pancreatitis and other entities. The other thing which was really striking me is the novel, less invasive modern in vitro models that are used to analyze the disease, and this is organoids and organ-on-chips technologies that were very nicely presented in IBD sessions and also in some of the cancer sessions, where we can take bits of tissue from a patient and try different therapies and see how the patients respond to them. So this is something that we'll see more and more in the future. Also, what I would expect in the coming years, and I think as UEG will be receiving more abstract coming in this era, is the artificial intelligence guided basic research. We see the surge of AI in endoscopy now, but with biomarker research, with molecular mechanism research, I think that AI can help develop new prognostic, diagnostic biomarkers and tools that we could use in the future, because we know that there are so many molecules. We all are so different in terms of genetics. So this is something what can help, hopefully, get this molecular mess in some sort of order in the future.
Maybe if I can add to this, I totally agree. And I think also new technologies, right? I saw at different sessions, can be on pancreatic cancer, with people using this special biology and doing proteomics and transcriptomics in situ, in tissues from patients, right? That maybe we couldn't use before because we're losing these markers in fixed tissue. This is opening a new venue for biomarker discovery, targeted therapies, and maybe AI, as you mentioned, is the future to see trends, right? Patterns in there. And also the beauty of people sharing cohort and patient samples, right? The collaboration that you can establish in UEG Week, and yeah, looking forward to the future in these fields.
But can one of you give me an example where you see there is already more than an association between composition of microbiota and some relationship in one of the diseases presented at UEG? Because I totally agree with you. There are a number of studies, but at least I might have missed it. Where's the beef?
So I think, Julia, you are completely right. So in terms of, let's say, diagnostic purposes, the microbiome as a biomarker for disease is still probably not available for clinical use, but soon there'll be a guideline out which will guide clinicians how microbiome testing could serve for the benefits of patients in the future. And I think there are more and more papers and abstracts showing up where with large patient cohorts, we can identify patients who are at risk or who could benefit from one of the other therapies. This is a very interesting area where we should dig in for the future. But at the moment, microbiome-based, let's say, diagnostic therapies are not there yet. But for example, for FMT, there were exciting abstracts that were presented where with the fecal microbiota transplantation, you can treat not only Clostridium difficile, difficult cases of it, but also to reintroduce the, for example, clinical response to checkpoint inhibitor therapy. So this was presented in the this year's conference by Gianluca Janiro in his study on cancer patients.
Yeah, I saw some sessions on. But still really early studies and then validation studies are tricky. There was a discussion on, do we have similar protocols, for sample collection, and how even diet can affect what we see, or even contamination. Some articles that are not moving forward the field because, you know, in the end, what you see is a signature based on contamination of the samples. But interesting studies and promising studies for further validation needed for chronic pancreatitis patients compared to pancreatic cancer cases using fecal samples. But the field is moving to try and use tissue or less invasive samples like blood. This will be the dream, but still, I think a lot of work to do, and particularly we need to work together on validation studies.
Yeah, totally agreed. That brings me to my next question. What was the most groundbreaking paper or talk you saw at UEG Week? Just you start.
Actually, there were many excellent talks, but if to choose one, I would probably feature the presentation, which was also presented in the plenary session of the meeting by Arno Borgenier from the Groningen Group from Netherlands. I think this study shows how we should deal with looking at the diseases in the long run, not only when they are already present, but trying to understand how they develop. So this study is a large prospective population-based cohort that was collected in Netherlands, including nearly 170,000 individuals. And these individuals were followed up for a long time, and they had their blood samples available before and after the diagnosis of IBD. And in this large cohort, population-based cohort, they identified 178 new onset IBD cases. And using modern technologies, sequencing technologies, they profiled the antibody responses before and after the diagnosis of IBD. Interestingly, what they show in this population of patients, that there are altered antibody responses, mainly against viruses and some bacteria and some bacterial components, which we all believe that are somehow involved in the development of the disease. So these distinct antibody responses appear even before the IBD diagnosis. And this kind of research, I think, in the future can help us to really identify the cause, not of only IBD, but also of the other complex diseases that we are dealing with in the field of gastroenterology.
I think it goes beyond gastroenterology because, I mean, following what you just said, the concept would be that a viral or bacterial infection like COVID, just as an example, primes your immune system. And what we are now heavily investigating, the post-COVID, if you want to say so, IBD, would be a post-infection problem if you have some predisposition. And we have to understand the patient cohort at risk. So from a mechanism, I totally agree, and I found it very fascinating to see the technology. I thought that whether that will be clinically meaningful in the next couple of years, I doubt it somehow, because we don't even dare to treat people who have citrullinated antibodies in rheumatoid arthritis, though we know that nearly 100% will develop symptoms. And the same is true for diabetes, where we also see antibodies long before diabetes becomes overt. But the finding I also thought was very interesting. Pilar, what about you? What did you like best?
I will say I really enjoy an overview given by Chani there on Tuesday on targeting KRAS in GI cancer, and a main focus on, you know, the poor outcome of pancreatic cancer patients, and how we started saying all the KRAS inhibitors are not going to see the clinical path, and how lately we see more and more clinical trials, impressive some of them, a lot of them going on in the US, but of course also in Europe, many different centers. And how now we see that side effects for the patients were lower than expected, and some promising data. So opening the you know, the window of opportunity for novel targeted therapies. Now, in the future years, as he said, we're going to see a bunch of KRAS inhibitors being approved. Hopefully, we can have an impact on our patients. And hopefully, this is opening the, you know, the path for many others to come. And I, you know, based on promoting some junior investigators, I really enjoy the talk by Carmen Motorreyes from the group in Munich. I have to say, using, as I mentioned before, spatial biology to discover molecular mechanisms in pancreatic cancer and really novel studies on the role of tertiary lymphoid structure in driving B cell maturation in pancreatic cancer, and the role of this tertiary lymphoid structure in the tissue, and how this is linked to nerve invasion and outcome of patients. So really promising immune studies in really promising cohorts. So looking forward to the future data.
So let's come back for a second to the KRAS inhibitors. So what's your take on that? Do you think that solely inhibiting KRAS or mutated KRAS will be beneficial for the patient, or is that just an additional, hopefully synergistic treatment approach?
Yeah, the speaker, you're totally right. Good point. Yeah, the speaker highlighted that even if they are really promising, there are different mechanisms of resistance, and still we need to understand, right, all these mechanisms. It's really a clever disease, right? So it's many different patients will see different mechanisms of resistance. So the future will be combo with chemotherapy and also with other inhibitors, so MAP kinases, and there are many studies combining KRAS inhibitors with other targeted therapies, but the problem here will be to control the side effects and response for the different patients. So a lot of genetic testing and genetic screening could be really useful to select the different combo therapies that we are using.
Thanks. So what has you surprised most this year at UEG? We always go to meetings and then research follows is a deduction of the past. But what really struck you?
If I may start, I think one of the things which was very good, and I think it's also was part of the scientific committee, to have a clinicians teaming with basic researchers as much as possible in presentations, in tandem talks. You could really see how well the discussion is developing in such type of presentations, because the questions in gastroenterology that we are dealing with are really complex. So that was amazing to see how much positive interaction and there is between us clinicians and people who are there more in the lab. So that's what I really liked. And what's I think also a very nice and growing trend in UEG week is the oral posters, which also offer opportunities a lot to young researchers to present their research. And it's amazing how much the audiences are getting actually involved in those short but very precise and good presentations. So that's something what's I think we should continue in the future.
I totally agree. And Pilar, what did you strike most?
I think a really cool point, an important point of UEG Week is to try to promote translational scientists and clinicians discuss how we can move the field forward. I think this is key. So all the networking opportunities on teaching also young GIs on networking opportunities. We all know networking is key, so even during poster sessions. And also the essentials of leading a global research network. This is key for us to learn how to lead European project, for example. And Enrique de Madaria had a really good session encouraging us to do this type of science. And just to finish, also, I would like to highlight something that I think is really unique to UEG Week also on Never Waste a Good Disaster. I think it's really educational and you learn a lot because you have a really multidisciplinary expert and makes you think a lot about how to use all the information that you have for your work.
Should we have a session like Never Waste a Good Disaster also for basic scientists? I mean, we wouldn't have penicillin if Fleming hasn't forgotten his bacterial agar.
That would be fun. That would be fun because I think things in the lab which go in a wrong way happen maybe even more often sometimes when you do all those experiments. But you learn a lot through those. So that's something what could be added maybe to the basic research course or something. So that's a very nice idea.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, sometimes people are not sharing what they think maybe is a failure, but this is the result, right? And can lead to really, really important data. So I think will be really fun also. Yeah, interesting at the same time.
So is there anything you take home that will definitely change your research or technologies you use quite now, something which really you tell your postdocs first thing when you came back, we have to do this?
Absolutely. There are many areas, and I wrote a follow-up email to all of my PhD students, to the colleagues in the lab, on some things that we should immediately do and implement after UG, because there are so many good ideas coming up regarding the translational research. What I've learned and what we're trying currently to introduce in our biobanking activities is this multi-time point biosample collection, because I think we are moving again forward from a single time point blood drawing and analyzing it in comparison to our control group towards multiple time points, because we know that maybe our genome is more stable, but microbiome metabolomics and other biomarkers, they're really shifting, and there's a lot of fluctuation across the time point. So when you think of a translational research project, try, I think, to think of multiple time points for biosampling, because this is something that's very, very interesting and relevant, I think.
Pilar, what about you?
Yeah, the same. I think, for example, one thing is networking. So I have been chatting. UG gives you the opportunity to chat with people working on similar but a different field. So connecting with different groups for people in my lab to go and learn the technique, but also to share knowledge. And as Justice was saying, resources. We have a biobank at UCL, and you know, you start thinking of new ways of using these samples, so new collaborations, but also focusing maybe for me on pancreatic cancer, on hereditary cases, and maybe we can do something better, as Justice was saying, not only one time point, trying to follow and start right now to create this type of cohorts, because takes long time. And I will also say that it's really important to communicate with, you know, you are in the lab and maybe you work with some clinicians, but you need a multidisciplinary team. You need to engage with pathologists to ensure that, you know, the samples you are analyzing are relevant to what you do, but also oncologists and gastroenterologists, everyone. You need to chat to everyone to ensure that that your science is top level, right? Yeah. So I think it's UG is amazing for, yeah, this type of networking, knowing people from different fields.
Okay, last question for both of you. What do we need to include in 2025 in Berlin? Anything you would like to suggest, which users and myself take to the SciComm meeting in November?
It's difficult to improve something that is really, really good already, but I think I am really happy to see that talks on opportunities for basic scientists and translational scientists are growing, and we are looking forward to these sessions that are more focused on basic scientists. I think it's the way of you know, getting more junior people engaged, and they can attend, and then they see how good the conference is and they continue going because they are the future. So looking forward to this. And yeah, I think you already do this, mixing basic science or translational science with clinical talks. And I think this is fantastic. And mixing different diseases together, but with a common aim, I really like it. So yeah.
So those are our disease primers. Watch out for them in the program. Jozsa, what about you?
Really looking forward to the basic research course that we already talked about. I think it will be a new major development for the UG that will make our conference way more attractive for the basic researchers. In terms of areas of research, I think we should be looking very much at the nutritional intervention studies and on how they modify the microbiome, because the nutrition is something what's I think will also change the future of gastroenterology in some years. There are many interesting developments in cancer vaccine, in new therapies which are being tested in clinical trials. So this is something what the oncology side would probably like to hear and more in our meetings. And I think one of the areas that will be also developing quite fast is the whole impact of metabolic syndrome for gastrointestinal diseases. Now that we have therapies available and more of them are in the pipeline, so it will be interesting to see how these new therapies may change metabolic syndrome, because it's linked with also gastrointestinal cancer, liver steatosis, and many other entities that we are dealing in daily clinical practice.
So thank you both of you taking the time and making this podcast for everybody. I hope we teased you somehow that you want to stream our sessions, which you can find on the platform. And moreover, we hope that after our podcast, we will see you, if you're interested in basic and translational science, at UEG Week in 2025 in Berlin. So thank you very much, and hope to see you soon, and hope to talk to both of you sooner than later. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.